This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together, we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. I want to welcome everybody to this episode of Fairways and Greens. This is your Vegas golf coach, Gaylord Rhodes, here in Las Vegas. And today, I'm excited to have a special guest for episode 34, Duke Nichols. And Duke's from up in Northern California, Yolo County, to be specific. It's where I met him 8 years ago. We were both Henry Griffiths fitters, and I happened to be the regional training director in that area when I bumped into Duke. At that point, Duke had already had a very, very long career up in that area, had worked with Henry Griffiths for a while, then became the head pro at El Macero for a while before he ventured off with a partner and built his own golf course, which I'll let him talk to you about. Beautiful little nine-hole facility with a beautiful driving range up in Woodland, California, and a nice teaching center. And I'll let Duke kind of tell a little bit of that story. He's now sold the golf course, and he's teaching full-time in Davis, California at Wild Horse, one of the golf courses that I used to run years ago. And I'm excited to have Duke on. He's an amazing individual, has a tremendous history in the game of golf, including caddying over 30 events. Very kind of instrumental. I mean, when I first met Duke, he was really helping a lot of people with the long putter and the long putter stroke. Although it's been outlawed today, Duke was very instrumental in showing me how to do that. So without further ado, I just want to welcome Duke in. Duke Nichols, how are you today?
Hey, Lord, I'm doing fine. It's glad to be here. And sunny Woodland, teaching the game of golf.
You know, Duke, it's been a long time. We've been friends for a long time, and a lot of similar backgrounds in when it comes to teaching and philosophies. And, you know, I introduced you, and I mentioned to my audience that you had been out on the tour for a long time, and I think it'd be kind of cool if you could talk about the time you spent with Keith Fergus and what you learned out there on the tour.
Well, that's true. I caddied about 25 events, Gaylord. It was a great learning experience for me, and one, helping Keith Ferguson was his instructor for 13 years, and I met Keith back in 1990 at an outing in Las Vegas. I see some mutual friends, and got to know Keith and watch him play with him. He was one of the best ball strikers I'd ever seen. And 1994, I went and saw him at the Bob Hope. He was a past champion. And then I went in Windsor in Santa Rosa, California here and watched him play. And a very nice individual and a pleasant guy to talk to and a great golf swing. Yeah. And what had happened in 1997... a good friend of mine who I caddied for at the Bob Hope had passed away, and I called Keith if I could come down and videotape his golf swing and so on. And I went down there, Gaylord, and unbeknownst to me, all of a sudden the golf swing had totally changed. He went from a great ball striker to a very poor ball striker. And when I got home after videotaping him there at the Hope, I watched him nine holes. I came back and studied the swing, and I waited about 3 months. He had trouble making a cut, and I gave him a call, and I flew back to Houston, started working with him, and we got connected that way, and I started to caddy, and got to meet a lot of the tour pros out there. Got to meet Litsky and Mike Reed and Watson and Hale Irwin. I mean, there's so many of them, and it was fun. And Keith was, I thought, the best ball striker out there, but it comes down to the short game, the chipping and putting, which Keith was at, you know, just average at, but just watching their strategy, the ball striking is very impressive, but the short game is what's the most impressive, Gaylord, and so the 25 events traveling all over the country, that was fun. He's retired since and playing in just pro-ams and outings, and so we just talk once in a while and see how life's treating us.
So, as I recall, he went to the long putter, and you helped him with that. Is that correct?
That's correct. Keith had trouble putting. So, again, we all go to what we feel, you know, people call it a crutch, but it's not. It takes the smaller muscle parts out of the motion. And, you know, I guess we call it under the gun. We hopefully don't yip it. But working with him and... he tried using that short putter when I was out caddying for him, and he and I told him he could not use one. He putted so poorly with it.
Yeah, and that's the key. I mean, it's the guys who make the putts out there that win consistently. So I remember coming out to see you and talking to you about it, and I was struggling with my putting, and I went on to do what you told me to do, and I actually had some success with it, and I converted back. I mean, old school, I used to pop putt it back on the old Bermuda greens back in the 60s and 70s, and it was just difficult for me to deal with the speed of the greens, and the you know, it was just completely different. Bent grass versus Bermuda, the whole thing, and so... I think the long putter had a lot of value. It's interesting to hear all the controversy with McCarron and Bernard right now.
Right, Gaylord. I worked with Scott McCarron for 5.5 years.
I knew that.
Got him on the tour, and you know, I invented a putting connection for a long putter,
right.
And I sent it to Scott, and he loved it. And the key is, you know, there's a certain technique that makes it so much more. But, you know, with the controversy over the long putter, talking to Keith Fergus, he said that the reason they changed it because it didn't look right. But I think that, it, you know, Ernie Els and Adam Scott and the success of Keegan Bradley with the belly putter and the long putters, that they took that away. Had those players not played well, I think you would see a different verbiage about this. The controversy with Bernhard Langer, and I think he put it bluntly, but he says if I was 100th on the money list, there wouldn't be anything said.
I know. It's true. It's absolutely true.
And the bottom line is, if it does give you an advantage, everybody has a right to use it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we watched the stats on it, to be honest with you, Jim. I mean, excuse me, Duke. And here's the thing. It didn't really show any advantage whatsoever. It was just, for certain people, it just worked better.
Absolutely, that's correct. If you look at an Adam Scott, when he used the long putter, he did putt better. And then he's gone back to the short putter. He played well and won back-to-back tournaments there in Florida last year. But the bottom line, it just keeps you more connected. It's the less moving parts. And, you know, it's a shame that you get a few people that complain about it, and they make a rule change based upon that, and I think that's a little bit unfair.
Yeah, I think the USGA has gotten a little out of hand over time, and I just, you know, that's just my personal opinion. So I think taking the long putter and the belly putters away from the average player was a mistake. I could see maybe the tour having a rule about it, but, you know, I just I think anything that makes the game easier and brings more people in and lets them have more fun is really what it should all be about. As you know, I mean, the game has dropped off. The numbers have dropped off a little bit. And so I think finally we're starting to see some activity to grow the game again, which is what we do as teachers. So,
well, that's correct. And you're absolutely right. The golf industry has suffered a little bit the last few years. As I was reading, we were losing approximately 500,000 players per year.
Right.
And, you know, because of the time consumption, and we got to make it fun. You know, we got too many rules out there for the average player.
Yeah, and I think they're making an effort to change those, and I really applaud that. I think finally the USGA, you know, they had a couple of bad tournament situations. I mean, some of the rules controversies really hurt their image, I think, and I think they've finally come full boat and they're beginning to realize that they need to kind of back off a little bit. So, but that being said, let's move on to something else. When I first met you, you just basically opened up Mountain Valley over in Woodland, and you were over at El Macero for a while. Before I leave, I want to ask you one question. Did you help Scott McCarron get into Henry Griffiths Golf Clubs? Were you the one? Yeah, that's what I thought. I knew that he went out there and won with them initially, and he actually got in that Model 82 driver and bombed it down there before they changed the face on it. That's just a little side story there. Got to get a plug in for Henry Griffiths. So
absolutely.
So you were over at El Macero, and you had this desire to build a golf course. And kind of go into that, because I think a lot of people don't understand what it takes to run a golf course and what it did to you and how it all evolved. If you could just share that with us, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely, Gaylord. I started in the golf industry in March 1st, 1980 at El Macero Country Club. As a third assistant under Bob Badger, I became the head professional in 1984 through August 16th of 1991.
Right.
And I had an opportunity to go over to Japan. And I went over there and tried for the Japanese tour. But in the meantime, from the time I left El Macero to the time I went to Japan, I would go practice at facilities. And, if you wanted to go practice your putting, you had to go to a certain facility to get fast and smooth greens. If you wanted to hit golf balls off grass, you had to go to another place. And
exactly.
So on. So when I came up with this idea, I said, why not build a facility that if you want a great practice facility, meaning cooking areas and putting green and a grass driving range. So I designed one. I put a 9-hole par 3 golf course, and then I've added a couple par 4s in there. And it's 36 acres, and it was a lot of work. I didn't realize at the time, Gaylord, that the bureaucracy of dealing with the government to put one in, and we got everything approved and permitted. It took a few years. And it was a great adventure and an eye-opener. I've got to believe that anybody listening that's built a golf course or bought a golf course, it's a 24/7 job you've created. And it was a fantastic learning facility for not only the beginners, ladies, seniors, and if the better players wanted to hit range balls and so on. And it was just a facility you could go to and feel welcomed and enjoyed.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, the extremely long driving range area. The tee box was huge. It had lights at night. Great little short putting green area, and then you had your teaching sent on. So basically, you were there. You slept there, basically.
Yes, I did, Gaylord. It did felt like it.
Yeah. No, I get that. I used to come by and visit you, and if you weren't out mowing the lawn or cutting the greens, you were in the teaching center teaching, or you're in the pro shop selling sodas, man. It was
right. That's exactly right. You end up wearing a lot of hats, and I always said if all I did was teach, I would be a lot better.
Yes.
Because when you wear all those hats and you borrow $1 million, you got that debt service, and you got a land lease bill, and you get PG&E, nobody really cares if it rains except you. And the stress level was somewhat high. But looking back, I'd do it all over again. But, you learn as you go. And so it was quite a learning experience.
No, I can hear you. So now you've kind of kicked back a little bit, and you're teaching over at Wild Horse. And I love that little golf course. It's gone through a tremendous turnover multiple times now. And I'm glad to see the clients have it now, and they're doing something productive with it. So you're teaching. Let's get in a little bit about your teaching philosophy and style, and maybe let your audience know how to find you, what you do, and a little bit. And then maybe let's talk a little bit about what's going on the tour, since you have some background in that.
Okay. Just to let people know that when I was at Mountain Valley, I used a machine. It was a computer. And what it was a harness that you put on, Gaylord,
right.
And it would measure the motion of which in a golf swing, and it would measure 28 parameters of the golf swing, and from the address, top of the backswing, impact, and follow through, and you can go into an auditory biofeedback.
Right.
All the drills that I had used for individuals, I could verify with all those numbers that it created the correct motion, of which the bigger muscle parts controlled the smaller ones.
Correct.
And, you know, using that machine, and what I would do, there's 3 types of learning skills of individuals. It would be dominant or visual is number one, kinesthetic, and auditory. And the setup I had, I would videotape. The kinesthetic would be the biofeedback you could set on the machine, which it enhanced the ability not only of the instructor identifying the problems, but the student learning quicker.
Right.
And so I'm a big advocate of the bigger muscle parts control smaller ones.
Yes.
There's principles to a golf swing, and I'm a big advocate that the hips control the motion. If I were to tell you my principles, it would be the hip rotation going back with width to the backswing.
Right.
And then the kinetic sequence, which starts from the ground up with the hip rotation into the front leg, hip pivoting around. And I found that 98% of golfers that came in to the facility, Gaylord, were in a reverse pivot. And
yes.
That was the number one error in a golf swing, which would create compensations after that, which would be the over-the-top early release chicken wing that impact off your back foot.
Yes.
So a big drill that I would give people was a feet together, knees together.
Right.
Ball positions off the big toe of the left foot. And you'd start with just a 9-iron. And you'd keep your feet planted and your knees together while you did this. But the swing thought you give people, Gaylord, would be the front right pocket of your pants. You put it to the back pocket, which created a rotary motion.
Exactly.
And then you would put the front left pocket back to the back pocket to turn and go through the shot. And by doing that, it created from the hips down, that rotation, which is the sequence of which we would want. And if a person was chicken winging it and the ball's going left to right, as we all well know, this would actually get the ball to actually hook.
Yes. No,
something that people would, you know, had trouble doing, it would just automatically happen. It became a byproduct.
I still use that drill, Duke, honestly. And, you know,
yeah.
I think if you question Norman, he'd tell you that was one of his major swing thoughts his entire career was right pocket back. And, you know, what it does is it creates rotation. And I think people are confused between what rotation is and turning. And the large muscles rotate, the small muscles turn you. And so I've always emphasized rotation and width.
Right.
Those two things are huge, and I think you see if improving those two things in most golfers make a huge difference in their ability to play the game. So I was fascinated when I went in and saw your machine, and it was kind of cool. And I sat there and watched you do a couple lessons. And to you know, I'm a kinesthetic / auditory learner.
Right.
You know, I think visually now it's so much more. You see so many more visual people because the world is visual. Everything is, we're bombarded with visual stuff. But when I grew up, man, I was just a feel, I just ran around and played all the time. And so for me, to be able to understand how it feels to make the motion was so big to me. And also the sound, particularly with putting, I'm very auditory with putting. And the it has to sound good. I mean, I have to get the sound right, you know, for the putter to feel right for me. So I know you believe in those three learning styles, and you've been able to help your students by understanding which one is their primary one.
Absolutely, because I'm dominant visual.
Yes.
And Keith Fergus was dominant kinesthetic.
Right.
And what was interesting, Gaylord, is when I would show him on the TV monitor what a swing looked like, he could not. You'd have to really have to explain it to him because he would look at it and not understand it. But
yeah.
If he could feel it, he could just replicate that motion.
Right.
And so at first it was somewhat difficult, but with the auditory biofeedback,
yes,
it created a kinesthetic feel for him that simplified it for him.
Yeah, and I had to do, you know, I had to put like a metronome, you know, Randy helped me with that auditory part just to get some rhythm in. But I was never visual. I mean, I have trouble target, you know, everybody says, well, visualize the shot. I'm going, that ain't going to happen. You know,
right. That's exactly right.
I had to feel the shot. I had to kind of feel the swing that was going to produce the shot I wanted to hit. And you know, and rhythm and I think rhythm and timing are so often not really discussed much in the golf swing, but they're huge, huge parts of it. And I look at my video and I, you know, I'm going, yeah, I don't even want to see myself. It just doesn't do me, it doesn't do me any good, you know?
Right.
I mean, I mean, I like to just, I know what I'm looking for, and so I've got to put a feel to it. So it's interesting when you understand and you can pick up on your students' primary learning.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One is, then I know how to teach them, what verbiage to use to get them in positions, or like Kenneth said, you got to put them in that position.
Yes, exactly.
And then the visual, what I use, a tablet, and then I show them. And you know what? I think 95% of golfers, gamers, have never seen a golf place.
I agree.
And so when they read in Golf Digest about something, they're going to implement that into their golf swing, but they've never seen their golf swing.
Well, of course not.
Yeah, so then you wonder, well, you may be doing that, but you're going to try to do that. I mean, it's so interesting to listen to students.
Yes, yes. I like the guy that comes in and says, well, this is my A swing and this is my B swing, and you're looking at him and you put him on film and you flip the two and go, okay, so which is your A and which is your B? And the guy's looking at it and he can't even see any difference in the two.
And, right.
You know, it's so interesting when they, you know, and they get a tip and they think, okay, I slice it, so this is a slice tip. So, but first of all, you got to understand whether it was a path slice or a face slice or a combination of both, and
right.
What created that in your swing. And it's just crazy. There's so much information out there now.
You know what? A lot of times, I've always said, if they were doctors, students would be dads. But it's you know, the key is, and I don't see it much when I watch TV, is the advocate of that turn going back, that rotation, the
yes.
way the box goes in the back.
Right.
Because once we get those students out of a reverse pivot, the ball flight changes dramatically. Not only does it has potentially, it can draw, but it's going to go much further because the kinetic sequence coming through is correct.
Yes, no question. I mean, I got a chance to talk to Knudsen before and you know, his big deal was elbows down, arms in, I mean, excuse me, rotate to load and transfer your weight to the finish. I watched his video endlessly. I got a chance, and I actually didn't meet him, but I got his video and I watched it endlessly, and Randy turned me onto his book, and there, you know, that was when I began to understand rotation. When he first said rotate to load, transfer your weight to the finish, I mean, I go, okay, yeah, sure, right, whatever. But to really understand rotation is a powerful thing in golf. And I think it's one of the key things that we don't see very often. And honestly, you know, when the arms and hands are control the swing, and you say, okay, I got to turn. So the arms pull you and turn your body, but you never really make a fully rotated motion. And consequently, your spine angle leans to the target, or you laterally shift. I mean, it's crazy. So
right. And you know, another thing, Gaylord, in teaching, we've done it for so many years, we have to simplify it for the student because we, at times, assume they understand everything we talk about. And times, you know, what happens is they're afraid to say, you know, I really don't understand that.
I know.
And so it's so important to let them know that there's not a bad question. You ask me, you need to know. If you don't understand, just say it.
I agree. I think, being able to communicate your ideas in a term that they can understand is part of the coaching process. And it takes time sometimes. I mean, they're, you know, to get their, build their confidence up. And I tell them, look, you're here. This is a non-judgmental environment, okay? We're
right.
here to help you learn. And I need to learn what makes that you can, what I can tell you that you can understand. So you have to have like four or five different ways to say the same thing if you're going to be effective. And it takes sometimes, you know, you latch on in immediately, and then some lessons you just, you know, and that's why I agree with you. I mean, I know, you know, I don't look at the clock. If I've got an hour lesson and it takes me an hour and a half to accomplish something, I'm going an hour and a half. I mean, I'm not letting
right.
a student walk out there until we have something, some drill, some concept to work on. So he has a model in his mind and a drill or a concept of what he's trying to do, because he's trying to develop his golf swing, and everybody's different.
Right. And you're right, Gaylord. It's, I've had it when I was over at Mountain Valley Golf Center, and I'm working on with the students. I mean, I'll go an hour and a half. If I got to go 2 hours, it doesn't matter. I've got to get this person in better positions so he enjoys the game of golf better. And the one thing is, as you're giving them swing thoughts and they're not working, and then you put another one in there and they identify immediately, and the ball flight changes dramatically.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you go, okay, there's their swing putt to create that same motion, like you're saying. You may have five ways of saying it, but you're really saying the same thing.
Right. No, I agree. I got a chance. I was poking around, and I ran across an article that the Davis Enterprise did on you, talking about the fact that you've now moved over to Wild Horse. And there were some interesting things you said in that article, and one of them was, and I think this is good news. This is good information for anybody, particularly those taking up golf. And your quote was, "Anything we do in life, when we know the basic fundamentals and principles of whatever sport it is, it still takes rehearsing to create motor skills." And I thought that was just a great quote. And I believe in golf, just like anything else in life, you have to have patience. And those two quotes were very, 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 very powerful and very true. Very true.
Oh, absolutely. It's in life, if we have patience, life's easier.
Yeah,
and golf and life are similar. If we're having trouble in life, sometimes golf stuff too. But I always use an analogy. If I give you a 50-page screenplay and you had to recite it by heart, could you do it in a week? And usually it's no. Could you do it in a month? And I always get the feedback, no, probably not. I said, if I gave you 3 months to do that 50-page screenplay, could you do it if you kept reciting it? And they always say, yes, I could. I said, golf's the same way.
Exactly.
You don't want to change your swing thoughts every swing. It has to be the same one to create that motor skill.
I agree.
But it takes patience, I'm telling you. Yeah. Golf will test you.
Well, when we were just before we actually started this recording, I'll let my audience in on that. We were talking about a friend of ours who we've both given golf lessons to, and he's a prime example of the guy that tries to change something every time you see him, or in the same lesson sometimes. And
yes,
and it's just they're hard to work with, as you mentioned, and I have to agree with you. I have a couple of those myself right now. So I think one of the things that people don't understand, and something that you mentioned also, was that when you come back to the game, and there's a lot of golf, I get a lot of seniors, I get a lot, I have my information out there, and I get a lot of requests from seniors that used to play 20 years ago, and all of a sudden they're retiring and they want to play again. And I think you had some pretty good insight on that, about stretching out, it's just, it's a challenge for those people physically.
Oh,
and I don't think
absolutely.
They understand. So I give them, I give them a routine of stretching and some exercises that will help them with their motion. And a lot of times you guys say, look, you might want to lose about 50 pounds too. Your goal is to play, a lot of these guys come in and say, man, I used to be a 10 and now I can't break 100. And I'm thinking, well, okay. So what do you, what kind of time commitment do you have? Do you have the time to practice? Do you have the time to put into it? And I think people just don't understand the challenge of golf and how long it takes to make improvement.
Right, right. I absolutely agree with that, Gaylord. Gaylord, I had a couple of students of mine. A lady had come in, and I got her on a clubhead speed. I found out her clubhead speed was only 54 miles an hour. And I told her, I said, to speed that up, if we get into a little workout routine. And so she bought a couple of dumbbells and she would do arm curls, she'd do, lunges and so on. And a month later, she came back and her swing speed went from 54 miles an hour to 76 miles an hour. She increased it by 21 miles an hour and the ball flight reacted to that. And I've had that happen quite a few times. And a stretching routine, as you said, seniors, when we don't do a lot of stuff physically, the muscles contract and we need to stretch them back out. Or, again, a good yoga class is good for everybody, not only just in golf, but in life. And having people do that. So we've had a lot of success with that. But, everything's like a job to people.
Yes.
Practicing is like a job. If you want people to practice, they'll say, well, I can do it twice a week. And they said, is that enough? And I said, well, if you did it four times, that's quite a bit better than two. But see, that's a lot for people.
Yes, it is.
And students don't realize what it takes to make those motor skills, the changes in your motor skills. But there's, again, we want to make it fun, and anytime you make it sound like it's work, people frown upon that.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, here's the thing. I encourage my students, look, if you can't hit balls, pick up your golf club at home every night and swing for 5 minutes. I mean, there was a quote that I saw from Hogan years ago that said, you know, a day without swinging a golf club is a day you've wasted. And, you know, if I go 4 or 5 days without picking up a golf club, I'm like, I pick it up and it's like, what is this thing, you know? And it takes me, you know, a little while to get back into a groove. And, you know, can you imagine, like, coming for a lesson and then maybe practicing 2 or 3 times in the first couple of weeks and then not doing anything for 2 weeks and showing up for another lesson? And
right.
We see that a lot. I mean, I know you had a great quote in that Davis article when they ask you, you know, what if you had 2 weeks away from your golf clubs, what would you do? And you pause for a minute and says, that's a great question. Wow, without golf for 2 weeks, I'd say I'd be lost. And people don't understand the importance of and all the great players are constantly swinging, practicing, and playing. So
that's absolutely, yes, that's correct. And, you know, I've never been asked that question, Gaylord, and I really did have to think about it. And the reason it took me a minute to even answer it, because I was lost thinking of an answer.
Yeah, I know. I found that kind of fascinating, because I would say the same thing. I mean, it's so important. And I'm going through my lesson and I'm evaluating, I always ask them, so how much time, when they tell you what they want, I always ask them, what are you trying to achieve by coming to see me? And then I said, so, you know, and the guy goes, well, I'm a 17 handicapper. I want to be a single digit. And I said, so do you realize what it's going to take to do that? And I kind of explained to them that, you know, it's going to take them probably 18 months. And maybe at the rate they mentioned, I said, if you want to speed this process up, you need to do something every day to make a difference in your golf swing. Even if it's just picking up a golf club and swinging to balance and trying to achieve balance. A lot of times I can improve motion better without the golf ball initially. So many people come in locked in on the ball as the target, and it's so difficult to, and it's just a hand-eye coordination, slap at it kind of deal. And, you know, we both believe that the large muscles should control the swing. And it's so hard to change motion unless, and that's why I love working with kids, because they're kids. They don't have jobs. They don't have stress. They can go to the, the parents drop them off and pick them up. And those are the guys like Jordan Spieth that lived on the golf course when they were kids that end up becoming some of the greatest golfers in the world. And I guess, you know, people just have kind of they think they're going to come take a lesson and everything's going to change.
That's right. It's as though we have a magic wand that will wave over them and things are going to be great after that.
So, dude, tell everybody how they can find you for once and what's going on right now. What do you have planned for the future?
Well, you know, over at Wild Horse, with all the changes that are going on, which are just a huge positive over there, they've talked about putting in a two-bay building for teaching, so we can teach from indoors to outdoors and hopefully get some of that the computer equipment that I had prior. And to get a hold of me, my email address is Nichols, NICHOLLS, 7272@gmail.com, or they can give me a call at 530-650-7473.
Well, I'm going to throw a plug in for you, Duke, and I hope this gets out to your audience in your area. But if you're in the Northern California area and you want a true professional, a old school instructor that understands how to coach and how to teach and has worked with some amazing people, tour players, Scotty McCarron, Keith Fergus, children, he's got the experience, and I would suggest you get a hold of Duke. If you're in the Sacramento and that area, anywhere within 50 miles, I would suggest you give him a call and bop on over to Wild Horse. He's got just an amazing instructor, and I'd like to thank him for coming onto the show today. And Duke, listen, if you have anything else you want to talk about, we can kind of shift off and talk a little bit. This is the PGA Championship week, and I'd like to get your insights on what's going on out there.
Well, Quail Hollow is a tough golf course just on its own merit, but lengthening out to 7,600 yards at a par 71, Gaylord, and they got starting the week with 2.5 inches of Bermuda rough, which will make it difficult. But
particularly since it's wet. Particularly since the Bermuda Rough is wet.
Yes, they got some bad weather coming in. So it's, you know, what's happened is in the PGA Tour they keep lengthening the golf courses, but I think by narrowing fairways and making the tougher rough. Can you imagine these guys playing when in the era of Hogan?
Yes.
We saw him at Olympic Club on 18, where the rough was about a foot and a half deep.
Yeah. Oh, it's just amazing.
I think the Bombers will probably be somewhat at an advantage because you look at the Dustin Johnsons, the McIlroys, you know, Spieth's short game and his putting is superior, and so I think we'll probably more likely see a Bomber out there winning this week.
Yeah, I kind of have the same feeling. You know, what I'd like, you know, one of the things before we go, I'd like to talk a little bit about, because I know you understand this, is, you know, I look at the pros now, and they're working out so hard they're physically, and they're lifting weights and pounding, and they're putting so much rotary force on their bodies now that the knees and backs are going to start going, and we're already seeing it. I mean, Tiger blew his knee out four times, then hurt his back. I think a lot of his had to do with the workout, but, you know, I think, you know, I just... And the sad thing is all the instruction that you see, and if you Google something, you know, a question about instruction out there, you're going to get all these different theories, and so much of it is geared up to what the professionals are doing, and the amateur has no chance of performing that motion that they're talking about. And the fact, another thing that irks me is, oh, yeah, you got to swing up on the driver. And I'm thinking, now, wait a minute. Every other club in the bag you swing down on, and you want to teach your students to swing down with their irons and up with their driver. I mean, it's hard enough to get them to make one balanced motion, much less two. And I think the equipment is so adjustable and so capable of handling. And we know for a fact by watching these guys that they're, you know, McIlroy swinging down at 1.5 degrees with his driver, and so is Dustin Johnson. They're not swinging up on it. Now, there are a few people that do, but these guys are the top players in the world. They're capable of having a driver swing and a you know, iron swing and function with it. And I think it's sad that, you know, so many things are compared and so much analysis now is based on what the pros are doing. And I think that in itself is kind of created an issue out there in terms of growing the game and making the game easier to learn. I think in a lot of ways there's too much technology. What's your belief factor on the driver? Should you swing up or should you swing down on it? Or level?
Well, Gaylord, as we were talking about earlier, you know, the 98% of the students I had were in a reverse pivot. So at one time, you know, they'd swing up, down, sideways. I mean, it was the over-the-top early release.
Yep.
Chicken winged at impact. So, but you know what? What's really throwing, I think, the golf world is that this distance out, you know, everybody that comes to you or comes to me, they want to hit the ball further.
Everybody.
And I tell them, the one thing I tell them, you're going to hit 14 tee shots. But you're going to have, you know, for par 72, it's 36 putts.
Right.
But they don't work when they hit that ball 15 to 20 yards further. And I think everything that we see on TV is based upon hitting the ball further.
Yes.
And it actually takes away from the game. Because if they can't hit it further, then that's their goal. They don't play as much golf. They don't practice as much golf. And I think it really takes away from the game.
You know, I kind of, you know, that's a good point. I kind of believe in that. I've had a lot of my seniors that came back and, you know, and maybe they've been playing consistently throughout their life. And they're, you know, they're getting shorter, they're getting older, and the game's just not as fun. I said, well, just move up a set of tees. You know, get closer to the hole. I mean,
right.
That's
because, don't let the egos get in your way. Play it shorter. And again, just get into some stretching. Just some stretching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your swing will probably be a little longer, which is fine if it's done with the bigger parts. But, you know, it's like you got to get on a little program if you want to be a better golfer.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's sad that people don't understand, particularly the new people. I love the new students that come in that have no preconceived ideas of what a golf swing is all about, and I can teach them the concept of how to use the tool and how to swing in balance. And, you know, balance is the key to everything in life. And these people come in and they're falling backwards and falling over and can't stand up in the golf swing. And, you know, a lot of the reverse pivots are because these poor people don't have enough loft in the driver, so they fall back and try to help it up in the air. And
right.
And so the bottom of their arc is a foot or two behind the ball, and then they put an iron in their hand and they make a similar move, and they wonder why they top it and hit it fat all the time. And
that's right.
And it's just a matter of really understanding impact. And you know, I was fortunate enough in the mid '80s to run across Randy and Henry Griffiths, and it opened up my eyes. And to get around a group of people like yourself and all the other great instructors and PGA professionals that founded that company and helped it grow and actually forced the industry into club fitting, more or less.
Absolutely.
You know, it was a great time, Duke. We both grew up in an era where we got to pioneer that. And you know, you introduced Fergus to the Henry Griffiths clubs and Scotty McCarron. They both did extremely well with them. I remember you once told me that I think Keith had a one of the old Homer drivers, and he said, "Yeah, he could hit that thing up a gnat's ass." And I'll never forget I'll never forget that. And of course, Scotty went out, and you know, there's so many things that we can do with our students to help them besides just the physical part and the swing motion and locking in on their learning style. But to be able to hand them a piece of equipment that rewards that is something that I think is overlooked by a lot of instructors out there. And I just think it's sad that I watch, as a regional, I used to go out and watch, you know, all these teachers teach. You know, that was my job, was to help them grow their business, and to watch them not even introduce or even check the equipment or even evaluate it for their student. And there was so much bad motion as a result of bad equipment. And I just think it's something that needs
absolutely.
To be. And the pros are dialed in. They all their equipment's dialed in. And I think, you know, if you're a golfer out there and you're taking lessons and they're not checking your, and your instructor hasn't even taken a look at your equipment or mentioned anything about its ability to help or not help you, I think, you know, you might want to look around for someone else, because he's going to teach you what works with the equipment you have. You're going to be doomed to that golf swing. And
that's right.
You know, it's hard to change that reverse pivot when the driver doesn't work with it. So
right. You know, I've always used that. I always said the number one player in the world, which would be Dustin Johnson right now, I could change his irons, make them 3 degrees more upright, and we wouldn't know who Dustin Johnson was.
Exactly. You know, he hits a 10.5-degree driver. People don't understand that. I mean, he's not swinging up on it. He's cranking it out at 128 miles an hour, and he's swinging down and level at it and letting the loft lift it with low spin, and it just goes forever. And
that's correct.
And I think that a lot of that's overlooked. And I'm fortunate enough to have the simulators now, and I have a weight transfer machine, and there's 4, 5, 6 different styles I've identified. Randy, you know, told me there's 14 styles he's identified, but he's a savant. So, but I've noticed that there's certain patterns that work. And when the student comes in and they fall close to one of those patterns, it's real easy for me to help them. And particularly if I can put a club in that helps reward that. I can even, you know, I've watched weight, I mean, guy comes in and he's got 40% of his weight on his front foot at impact, and you're going, well, let's see if we can fix that. And a lot of times the equipment causes that, and they just really don't understand it. You know, they think that the 9-degree driver is going to go farther than the 13-degree or the 15-degree driver.
Right, that's correct. They don't. Most amateur golfers do not have enough loft on their drivers.
No, it's a common issue, and you know that. You were part of the team back then, so.
And
I think it's kind of gone by the wayside. I just think that there's not as much emphasis on how equipment affects motion these days. So,
that's right.
Dude, I'm excited to have you on the show. I'd love to do any more shows with you. If you got some topic you want to talk about, if there's something going on up in Yolo County that you want to promote, if Wild Horse wants to promote something, you and Charlie can come on and do a little show, and we can shoot it to you and broadcast. My show, Fairways and Greens, is designed for anyone who has a passion in golf. And if there's anything you want to bring up in the future, if there's something going on, I can do this a recording for you and shoot it out to you, and you can post it all around your whole network of people. And I'll get this thing. If there's anything else you'd like to talk about, throw it out there.
Well, you know what? We'll just save it, because I will want to talk about some more stuff. And
good.
And what I'll do is I'm going to kind of format it so I'll know exactly how to lead. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. No, I absolutely. Listen, this is our first shot.
I used to have my own radio. I co-produced the radio show. I had one, before I got Mountain Valley.
Yeah.
So,
and I've done live radio here in Vegas.
Radio's golf show.
Yep, I did live radio here too as well. So, you know, I just this show is just a conversation between fellow professionals for the most part, but it's available to anyone. I've opened it up as an avenue for anyone with a passion that has a product or has a tournament or a charity event or something they want to share with the world. We can get it out on this podcast. It's broadcast internationally, and it's also available to put in your local media and your local Facebook sites, website. And so I just want to put that out there for my audience as well that's listening in. And Duke, whenever you have something you want to share, just get on, and we'll do a 30-minute show. We'll do a 15-minute show. It doesn't matter how long it is. This program is open to anybody with a passion for golf.
Okay. That sounds fantastic, Gaylord.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on, and I really do want to do another show. So if you got a subject matter you want to talk about, to get out there to maybe just let your students know your philosophy or something specifically for your audience, this show's available for that. And all you got to do is just shoot me out what you want to do, and we'll do it.
Okay, that sounds great.
Well, I'm excited to get this show up and get it broadcast, and I want to say hey to all my friends up in Sacramento. And when you see the guys, let them know I still think about them, and it was fun. I was up there for 8 years, and it was really just a neat part of the world, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And, again, we'll definitely do this. And when will this air?
Well, I'm going to shoot it out. Hopefully they'll get it up maybe tomorrow. As soon as it's up, it's going to go. And this is for my audience. Anytime you want to go, it's golfcoachpodcast.com is the main site for Fairways and Greens. It's the main website. From there, your show will go up. You'll have your own page and your own information. When it comes out, Duke, I'll shoot you over a link to it. Then you go there and you can click. And I'll explain to you how you do it. Just give me a call and I'll help you guys. Charlie will probably know too.
It's called Golf Coach
Podcast.com for my audience.
Okay.
And before we go, I want to give you one more hit. So if you want to reach Duke, the best way to reach him is going to be to give him a call directly at 530-650-7473. And you can also probably reach him, if you can't get him directly for some reason, you can always call the Wild Horse Clubhouse where he teaches at 530-753-4900. And Duke, give us that email address again.
Yeah, that's Nichols, Nichols, 7272@gmail.com.
Right on. All right, Duke, I appreciate you coming on, and let's do some more shows. I really enjoyed it, and I know you've got a ton of other things you can share with us.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Gaylord.
All right, Duke. Think about what you want to do, and just give me a call anytime. Let's do a show. And with that, I want to thank all my audience. I want to thank Duke Nichols for coming on the show today. And with that, I'm going to say adios.
All right. Thank you very much, Gaylord. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. Well, folks, it's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to golfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, the Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.